Dr. Stan, and we ran out of tape there, so we're going to turn this over, and we're going to get back to Dr. And let me say, everything's in good shape. The tape is running. So you were saying how they were going to change our attitude towards abortion, and how in 1969, abortion was illegal in every state. So what did they plan? How were they going to change that?
Well, the idea is to promote early sexual activity among the kids, connecting it strongly with the use of contraceptives. It would be taught that the two just naturally should go together. And then with the realization that with more sexual activity, there would be more pregnancies, more contraceptive failures, one might say. But no need to worry about cluttering up the planet with unwanted babies, because abortion then would be available as a backup. And with young girls getting pregnant too early in their life, people who otherwise would maybe object to abortion when, you know, in somebody else's life, would say, yeah, but I no longer object because this is my daughter, and I don't want her to have to carry this pregnancy to term because she's not yet mature enough to be a mother and take care of a baby. So it was sort of a win-win situation for them. It would break down resistance to abortion, as well as reinforcing continually the need for contraception or sex without babies.
You know, as you talk about this, it sounds so diabolical, almost like the plan had come right out of the pit of hell.
Yes, I think so.
And so looking back on this, as you've seen it unfolding over the last 29 years or 28 years, it must have been terribly, terribly frustrating for you seeing these things and knowing what was going on, and yet realizing that the vast majority of the American people had no idea at all what was transpiring.
It was frustrating, and even talking with some of my colleagues who heard the same presentation, and not very long afterwards, they had all seemed to forget it. They'd say, oh yeah, I remember he was here, and I remember he talked about some stuff. But as far as details and saying, well, don't you remember when he said this, that, and the other? They said, no, did he say that? Well, I don't know. When I say that, what comes to mind is one of my colleagues, Dr. Day, had spoken about the demise pill. The demise pill, there was consideration to be given to an arbitrary age after which, you know, everybody should just pass on. The age could be set by law, 75, 80, 85, whatever seemed to be appropriate at the time. And then when you reach that age, you would be a candidate to take the demise pill. And he said this attitudes about death needed to be changed and made more, quote, realistic. So, you know, we're all headed for death one way or another, so why not do this in a very cerebral, scientific kind of way? So the idea was that when you had reached the legal age, you could have this nice banquet, sort of a farewell banquet with your family and friends, and afterwards go off and take your demise pill and sleep away peacefully. One of my colleagues who we were outside a meeting in the hospital, and there was some talk about he was having some pain. He was coming into the hospital to get some tests and maybe have some surgery. He said, what are you going to do at night? You know, the night before the operation, maybe you're a little restless and you can't sleep. And the nurse comes in and says, well, here's your sleeping pill. Are you going to take it? Mm-hmm. If you take it, maybe they won't have to do the operation. He just laughed. He said, did he say that? I didn't remember that. And I said, yeah, you better remember he said it.
And so they were, even back in 1969, they were talking about a more or less coerced or forced euthanasia. Did they talk at all about other countries, how they were going to control population in other countries, or the possibility of fomenting disease to control a population?
Yes. There were a couple of things there. One, there was a part of the presentation where he said new diseases will appear. They will be very difficult to diagnose. A doctor seeing these for the first time, of course, will not know what's going on. And the reason I remember this so strongly was I was fairly new in practice. And after hearing him talk about new diseases that would appear, I'd have a youngster in the office and be examining him. And I'd say, gee, he's got this fever and these symptoms, and it just doesn't add up. I wasn't, absolutely certain what was going on. Well, right away, my memory would ring a bell and say, could this be one of those new diseases he was talking about? Well, as it turned out, that was not the case in my practice or with any of my kids. But in retrospect, I think he was talking about AIDS. There were some other things that were said that sort of lead me to that conclusion.
What other things were there? Because, of course, my major interest has been the AIDS epidemic. I've been battling this for over a decade. So what other things were there that, if you can recall, and I know this is a long time ago, but I just thank the Lord that you took those notes and on the napkins and then re-recorded them. What other things did he say that makes you think that perhaps the AIDS epidemic has something to do with a plan?
The continent of Africa is a very rich continent.
Now, that's what he said.
Well, I'm sort of paraphrasing.
Okay, fine, right.
And I don't recall that this was in immediate juxtaposition to AIDS, but it was pretty close.
Okay, so of course the AIDS epidemic is simply decimating, depopulating Africa. The American people don't know that, but it's really happening today. And so is he talking about possible disease, Africa, or just the fact that it was such a rich, rich continent?
Well, here we have a world that's soon to be overpopulated, soon to run out of natural resources, and here's this great big continent of Africa full of resources. Now, this continent should not be left to people who have never been able to develop it. The continent should be under the control of people who know how to develop and manage all these resources. And in effect, what that means is you have to get rid of the people that are there now. Not totally, perhaps, but in large part, to make room for the managers to move in.
That's a frightening, frightening thing to contemplate, and yet that's exactly what is happening in Africa today.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that it's always veiled under concern and love, and we're helping you out. We love all our fellow men. But there were some comments about, let's face it, not all people are equal. We all know that. Some people are not as smart, not as capable, and capable of doing only menial tasks. And there were some racial allusions there. Now, if you have a continent full of people that are not capable of doing what Europeans are capable of doing, or Europeans who have become Americans are capable of doing, then you can't leave such a large, rich continent under the control of people that can't manage it.
And the ultimate in racism hiding behind the banner of love and compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Okay, fine. So basically he was talking about, did he say these diseases would be produced? Where would they come from, these new diseases that were going to come into society?
That was not explicit at the time, as I recall it. I just, the best I can recall was that they would occur, that I kept wondering, am I going to miss them? Will I ever recognize them? Or even will I get them?
Right.
You know, would I myself succumb to something like this? But in terms of how this would be brought about, I don't think that was addressed at all.
Okay, so we begin to see, though, an active program that not just sort of passively bringing about population control, but actively bringing about population control.
Yeah.
Were there any other points that he made as far as population control is concerned? But, you know, because these ideas are so foreign to the average listener, the idea that we would have a demise pill, in other words, we would kill older people, and we would, 1969, the idea that we would start aborting the children of this country in mass numbers was so foreign. Did he talk at all about pushing abortion towards certain racial or ethnic groups?
That sort of grew out of talking about promoting drug use.
Well, let's get into talking about promoting drug use, because that is so important, especially today when we see drugs destroying the inner cities of America.
Not everybody deserves space on the planet. Not everybody deserves the right to marry and reproduce. So certain people have to be sort of shunted. Now, I don't mean individual selection where you identify a particular human being, but certain populations with certain group characteristics have to be shunted. Now, part of this grows out of transferring industry overseas. I thought in terms of our steel industry, where a lot of wage earners, you know, didn't have to have a lot of education, a lot of savvy, to do the work and earn a wage and raise a family. But when these industries are either closed or transferred, then the wage earners don't have any place to go to earn money to raise a family. Women, this is an education guy. I learned a whole lot there. He said, women are attracted to men who are good providers. See, when I was a kid, I thought they were attracted to Clark Gable and a good-looking movie star. And so this was a really revelation at my age at that time. He said, this, women are attracted to men who are good providers. They don't much care what a man looks like. Whereas men are more attracted to a woman by her appearance. And also a man identifies himself by his work. And as I thought about what he said, many times in the long years, I think that's absolutely correct. I'm Joe Blow, I'm a welder. I'm John Jones, I'm a stockbroker. You know, I think it's true, we do tend to identify ourselves. Well, if you have no job by which to identify yourself, you're not a good provider to attract a woman to become your wife, then you're not going to have as great an opportunity to bear children. Now, if you have a whole bunch of young men who are unemployed, are not good providers, have no strong identity through their work, you know, what do these guys do when they get together? Well, there's a certain homosexual promotion there, and a certain, you know, falling into crime.
Sure.
Which I think is a natural consequence, and which was recognized.
Well, now, were you talking about crime, or were you talking about drug use? Well, where does drug use come into this whole situation?
Okay. Now, if you're young and you have no job, and you have no family, no responsibilities, and life is just a bore, then you're more vulnerable to abusing drugs.
Now, did he suggest that they would encourage drug use?
Yeah, yes.
That is an incredible prediction of what the direction that these people that Dr. Day represented would be taking our society, because they had to have powerful control or powerful influence over governmental positions and governmental activities.
Mm-hmm. The idea was to create sort of neighborhoods, doesn't seem like the right word anymore, but certain areas of the cities that would be the jungle We have progressed so far that the laws of natural selection no longer operate. This is sort of a near quote, paraphrasing. There was natural population control in previous years, predatory animals and wars and disease and such. But now the technology has nullified a lot of that. This is part of the problem of overpopulation. So since the former law of the jungle no longer applies, we would now have a new law of the jungle, and the jungle would be certain areas in primarily large metropolitan areas where people just have no opportunity, no hope. The areas would be allowed to deteriorate with the idea that as despair grew and people sought refuge in drugs and alcohol, then a certain amount of violence would be predictable. And that's okay, because that would, you know, if you die in 1969 because somebody shot you, or if you died in 1769 because a bear got you, a mountain lion got you, what's the difference? You're dead in either case. You succumb to the law of the jungle. The survival of the fittest, on the other hand, means that in a time when you had to be a crack shot with your musket and you got the mountain lion, the only difference is that now, instead of being a musketeer, now you're a computer genius. Those are the criteria by which you select who survives.
And now, of course, when Dr. Dave was making all these predictions and telling you what the future held, didn't he make some reference to the fact that everything was in place, that nothing would stop this at the present time, and so he felt at least somewhat able to reveal these things to you?
Yes. Yes, that was fairly early in the presentation that was said. That was 69, and as best I can recall, there was nothing specified as exactly what was in place now that hadn't been. But he said something that even as recently as 5 or 10 years earlier, he could not have spoken with such assurance about what the future held.
And, of course, he went on then to become some sort of an official with Planned Parenthood?
He was, at the time when he spoke, he was medical director of Planned Parenthood Federation of America.
And he had been a professor at the Year Medical School. He was a very well-known neonatologist?
Yes. Yes, and then he left here and went to Planned Parenthood Federation in New York, became disillusioned there, and I'm not sure the nature of that disillusionment, whether it was ideological or what, but he did become disillusioned with them and left.
And he has subsequently died. He's passed away.
Yes, yes. He died either roughly 8 years ago. I'd have to look and see my file.
So he never saw his dream come to fruition, but certainly the people who are in sympathy with these ideas are seeing it unfold today as America moves into chaos and crime and drugs and new diseases developing all across America. Basically, as you look back on this, what do you think possibly motivated Dr. Day to tell you these incredible things?
Everybody asks that question, and I can only speculate. I really don't know. There was not an opportunity to ask. But I think there were a couple of things that were involved. One was that I think he had divided feelings about this. On the one hand, repeatedly saying this is the only way, there's no other alternative, feeling that somehow or another the human race would perish otherwise and that the human race should be promoted to go on.
This is a very common position taken by elitists. Professor Quigley, who we have studied very extensively, Bill Clinton's mentor, really believed that we needed a ruling elite, else Western civilization would be destroyed. And what you're really describing is a ruling elite with a program to try to preserve at least some element of civilization?
Yes, Yes, I think that's the upfront part of it. And then in the intervening years, it has often occurred to me that what also seems to underline this is a more long-range look. You know, they talk about progress of the human race, progressing. And one should stop and say, well, progressing toward what?
Right.
And especially when you hear somebody say, we believe now that we have the means to accelerate and control evolution. Evolution toward what? Well, I think one possibility, I don't know that I've heard anybody state this explicitly, is that we will progress toward becoming gods. Now, that sounds a little bizarre, but when you go back to Genesis, and Adam and Eve took from the tree of knowledge, and the serpent said, ye shall be as gods.
In other words, what you're suggesting is what energizes these people is a spiritual force, the idea that the serpent's message that ye shall be as gods if you go along with my program.
Mm-hmm. You can't evolve to a higher plane.
And as incredible as it may seem, I read many, many publications by people, these are occultic and Luciferian publications, where this is the basic underlying theme, where mankind will supplant God and bring utopia to the world. Well,
while I'm thinking about the book of Genesis, when you go to the end of that chapter, and when God expelled Adam and Eve, and he said they got to the tree of knowledge, a verse or two later, he sets a cherubim in guard of the tree of life. And I think about that, you know, we get all this sperm banks and cloning of animals and talking about cross species, fertilization. I often think about that. You know, babies without sex and sex without babies. And very early in the game, God set up a cherub. He said, they go to the tree of knowledge. I'm going to keep them away from the tree of life. Just for fun, go to Genesis and read that and see whether you find any application to what's going on today.
Well, I think that this is all prophetic. I mean, we see these things unfolding, and for people who don't know the Lord or know the Bible, these things seem impossible. For those of us, and I know you're a believer, who see these things unfolding, we see God's hand, and we also see the hand of of Lucifer in this whole incredible story. Well, are there any other points you'd like to bring out for our listeners?
Well, we were talking earlier about unisex stuff, or at least I think we alluded to it, the masculinization of women, girls. And I don't know whether you've noticed in your area, but in our area, in the last few years, the sports pages are full of girls' sports.
Girls' basketball, you know, and as if...
Is that true out your way?
Oh, yeah, sure. And we have girls' basketball teams here. They're, Olympic girls' basketball teams, girls' volleyball teams, all of these things, you know, where they're so competitive with men.
Mm-hmm. Is soccer a big thing out there?
No, we don't have soccer out here, to my knowledge.
That'll probably become...
women's soccer, you're speaking of.
Well, no... Women's and men.
Okay.
Probably someday co-educational soccer,
right.
I don't know. But the reason for this is that we can't have girls in lacy dresses smelling perfumey and attracting the men.
You mean if they're sweaty, they're not going to be as attractive?
Right.
Incredible, incredible. Did he actually talk about things of this sort?
Oh, yeah. That was very explicit. Girls would be made less attractive because they would be, just as you said, sweaty.
Right.
Full of, you know, sports and just like another guy.
Right. Big muscles and all those things.
So that was one of the early parts of masculinizing women. And then, of course, another part that I don't think he put in these terms, but I interpret in these terms then is a woman is a good woman to the extent that she mimics a man, and that is leaving her home and, you know, going out into the workforce and becoming CEO or office manager or some big outfit rather than staying home and taking care of children. But along with the de-feminizing of girls, in the professional magazines that I get where drug products are advertised, there's one that shows all these girls in their soccer uniforms, mud all over them, their hair's all wet and stringy, and this is held out to the young girls as, you know, this is what you ought to be, this is what a young girl is, she's a muddy soccer player.
Right, of course, you know, we can do anything that boys can do, and we can do it better, and the competition between women and men, without realizing that we all have a place and a part to play in God's plan. Well, Dr. Dennehan, it's been a fascinating, fascinating hour, and we'll be playing this afternoon and several times on our various radio programs. I want to thank you so very, very much for taking time from your busy schedule to be here on Radio Liberty, because I think your message, going along with many of the other messages that we have, begins to tie this together, and I hope our listeners will be far wiser from having heard your memories from the lecture by Dr. Day, 1969, 28 years ago.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be on, and I hope it's helpful to folks.
I hope it will be too. May God bless you, and I hope maybe at some time in the future we can talk to you again.
Well, I would like to.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan, an amazing, amazing tape with a gentleman who I believe God has preserved him to tell us the story. And I hope that you've enjoyed this program as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. And so until next time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.